Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but don't you know?
Yeah, we did. We started to burn many things we found. That's the magnificent, wonderful, and beautiful Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, B-E-R-N-Z, the Solartopia song on from the Grammy-winning album, Tomorrow's Children from Appleseed Records. This is Harvey Wasserman on with the great David Swanson. I am barreling up the 101 in California. So far, I have four bars. We had planned to be in Monterey, but we didn't make it. So if for some reason, I am cut out here, the great David Swanson will take over as one of our great consummate talk show hosts. My beautiful daughter, Julie, is driving the car. Thank you so much. David is one of our great peace activists. He's in Charlottesville, Virginia. He's the one person that everybody should be talking to about what's been going on in Charlottesville, this fascist assault on American democracy and American life, the rise of an openly neo-Nazi KKK, alt-right, white supremacist movement being supported by the President of the United States. There's nobody better to talk about the multiple Nobel Prize nominated peace activist David Swanson, who's so kindly taken time away from his children today. So, David, if I lose you for some reason, just please take over. We are assured there are plenty of bars here up on the 101. How are you today?
I'm good. Hi, Harvey. How are you?
Great, David. Great. So you are in the belly of the beast here. I mean, Charlottesville is such a beautiful, peaceful, tranquil college town, and all of a sudden, the neo-Nazi KKK is marching all over the place with dancing to the tune of the President of the United States. So you being on the ground there, just tell us what's this like. What has Charlottesville been like the last couple of weeks?
Well, it's not as all of a sudden as everybody thinks who doesn't live here, right? Because they had a big KKK rally back in July. They had, through June and May and April, they had, right-wing rallies. The guy from Minnesota running for governor of Virginia wanting to be a Confederate. All the Trump supporters and the racists and the Ku Klux Klanners have been rallying around this Robert E. Lee statue for months. I mean, I was in Russia when it was in the, last spring when it was in the news that they were shouting, "Russia is our friend, Russia is our friend," and Russians are asking me, "What does it mean? We didn't even have slavery in Russia. They're our friend. We don't get it." So it's been building because there's been this big debate for years now, since the Black Lives Matter movement got going, over whether to get rid of these statues in Charlottesville. And they've had, blue ribbon commissions and reports and public hearings and testimony from everybody and their brother. I mean, a very democratic process, and finally came up with a vote to get rid of Lee but keep Jackson and the other little generic Confederate guy and rename the parks, which they actually did. But then getting rid of Lee is held up in the courts because there's a state law, because there are racists suing in court, and because there's a state law that says you can't take down any war monuments, racist or otherwise, if there are you know, such things as non-racist war monuments. And and so because I think because there's this tentativeness and this debate over whether to take them down or not, and because Charlottesville's seen as this offensively liberal and Democratic Party island in a sea of Republicanism, not to say, you know, medievalism, it's become this target, and it's grown and grown. And because the police militarized and overreacted and attacked the wrong people back in July, you know, it really grew to this thing in August. And now they've hurt their cause so badly that statues are falling like, you know, sand off a hill around the country, but not yet in Charlottesville. You know, we're going to bring up the rear on actually getting rid of the statues.
Well, let's talk about Robert E. Lee for a minute, because I don't want to lose track of him. I did put out a piece, which I think you saw, about the real Robert E. Lee. He's a very complicated character, and you as a Virginian, you know, I have made the case that if Robert E. Lee had not gone with the South, he was offered personally by Lincoln the command of the Union Army. And at the time, he was a much better strategist, a much more accomplished military tactician than anybody on the Union side. And had he stayed with the Union, I think that the Civil War would have been a lot shorter. And I'm wondering also, you know, he expressed doubts in some of his personal correspondence about secession. And if he had actually come out as Robert E. Lee, first on top of his class, near the top of his class at West Point, he was considered a hero in the Mexican War. He's the guy who hanged John Brown. If he had come out, and he was the son of White Horse Harry Lee, who was a hero of the Revolution, if he had come out against secession, I wonder if it would have been a major blow to the whole rebellion, and maybe even have swung Virginia to not join the Confederacy. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, that certainly would have been nice. You know more about it than I do, I suspect. But I think the fact that somebody had doubts about secession, you know, just as he had doubts about owning people and forcing them to do his work and whipping them, you know, is not the same as changing his actions. I think you have to treat somebody based primarily on what he or she did, not what on he or she considered possibly doing, but you know, never acted on. But you know, actual human beings like Robert E. Lee, the actual person, are incredibly, infinitely complex, and there's always infinite measures in them to praise and to condemn. And I would apply that to myself as to any other actual human being. But this is a monumental, heroic god on a giant pedestal in the central square in the center of a little town that has no other monuments to anything other than Confederate generals. You know, in the downtown, there's Lee and Jackson and a generic Confederate. And in the broader, you know, city outside of the center of downtown, has nothing but war monuments to the slaughter of Native Americans, to World War I, to the war on the Vietnamese, etc. And that's it. So we're looking at a city that over the centuries has been full of dramatic stories of Native Americans, of slavery, of segregation, of desegregation, of civil rights and women's rights, a university, academics, artists, scholars, athletes, activists, you know, and not any of it. You know, 99.999999% of Charlottesville history does not exist in monumental statuary or otherwise. You know, it's just gone. So if, you know, somebody, you know, quipped recently, you know, you can only teach history through statues, and because Germany has no Nazi statues, that's why we've never heard of Hitler. You know, this idea that because there's, you know, an important story in Robert E. Lee and there are good things as well as bad things about him means that we have to have him held up as our public hero in the center of our town or elsewhere enemies of history. you know, it doesn't make any sense to me. This is a guy, Robert E. Lee, who after the war said we should put up no Confederate monuments. We should erase, you know, the wounds are going to be kept open of this Civil War if we memorialize it. Let's heal this country. You know, in his lifetime, nobody did put up any monuments. It was decades later. And in Charlottesville, it wasn't a public decision. It was one rich guy who donated the park and the statue, among other things, to Charlottesville for the cause of racism, for the cause of white supremacy. So, you know, I'm in favor of tearing them down, but, you know, not smashing them, putting them in a museum and letting people go to a museum and learn what they are and what was the period Robert E. Lee lived in and what was the period that put up all the monuments.
Well, that's very well stated, David. I like what you said. I think what they should do, here's what I advocate. They should take every Confederate monument in the South, all the statues, and they should establish a national park at Andersonville, where the prison camp where the Confederates were responsible for, I don't know, 10, 20,000 Union soldiers dying of neglect. And they should put all the monuments, all the Confederate statues at Andersonville. That would be very cool. And, of course, you know, the commandant of Andersonville, who was not an American, I think he was Austrian or German, he's the only guy that was executed by the Union after the Civil War. So I think that would be and I'm against that, by the way. I'm against the death penalty, as I'm sure you are. So I'm sorry they executed it. But I think you're exactly right. They should take these monuments and put them in museums. That's where they belong.
Yeah, some one place, like you say, where they could all be collected and the history accurately told. I think there should be historical markers where they're removed from to say what was here and why and what was wrong with it. But then there should be the history accurately told where they're taken to, the history of their creation and use in the cause of the lost cause and white supremacy and the history of the war. You know, but I think there is a memorial to Robert E. Lee that should stay and can't easily be taken down, and that is Arlington Cemetery, where the dead are displayed on his land. That's an appropriate memorial to war.
I think you're exactly right. Arlington National Cemetery was his family's land, and the Union made a good point of making it a national cemetery when he went off and became a general for the Confederacy. And, you know, Robert E. Lee, I'm sure he was congenial. He would have probably been a very interesting guy to have dinner with. He was a very smart man. Why he went with Virginia is a terrible tragedy. It was a tragedy for his family. You know, he had a number of children. His couple of his daughters never married. The family was bankrupted. It was a terrible, terrible decision that he made, becoming the leader of the Army of Northern Virginia. And it's a great, great tragedy. He's one of the true tragic figures of American history, along with Lyndon Johnson and a few others who made really, really bad decisions about war and ruined what could have been otherwise great careers. I think there are very few people who are as important as in American history as Robert E. Lee. I'm surprised to hear that he has the central statue in Charlottesville and not Thomas Jefferson. I mean, Monticello is right around the corner, and Jefferson founded the University of Virginia. Aren't there monuments to Jefferson as well?
Well, at the University of Virginia, which is, you know, a little ways west of downtown Charlottesville, there are, I think, three statues. There's a statue of a World War I pilot, you know, an alumnus of the university who died in a plane in World War I. There's a statue of Homer, the poet of Greek War, and there's a statue of Jefferson. I think it's about an accurate life size, not a giant, it's up on a tall pedestal, but it's not a giant, oversized statue of Jefferson. And in fact, what happened the night before this horrible rally last Saturday on that Friday night, the opponents of the racists were gathered in a church just across the street, slightly down the street, and on the other side from the Jefferson statue in front of the Rotunda, which is the building with a dome at the university. And the racists and the fascists all gathered around Jefferson with their lit torches and started fights and chanted Nazi slogans. And you know, the thing is, Jefferson, Lee, any of these people, they basically agreed with what these racists say about the races, and yet they're held up as, you know, heroes by the liberals who are, come to defend Jefferson from the racists. You know, I just, like, within the past half hour, I got an email from the Miller Center at the University of Virginia, which is this, you know, branch of the University of Virginia that holds public events with speakers and so forth. And they, you know, it took them 5 days. They finally had an opinion about the events of Saturday. And they sent out this email in which they said, "We agree with our great founder, Thomas Jefferson, that an educated citizenry is the important thing," you know. And they're talking about someone who owned human beings, who did not pursue their education as citizens, but pursued profit off their blood and toil. There's all sorts of levels of hypocrisy here, and, you know, racism built into the fabric of this town, liberal as it is. And, you know, most people didn't want the statues taken down. Most people wanted to add some statues of other things. Now, and that includes our mayor, who's been going on TV acting like he was, you know, it was his idea all along. He voted against taking the statue down. But now that the statues are coming down across the country, now more and more people in Charlottesville are in favor. You know, it's become a mainstream position because of, you know, resentment of these violent Ku Klux Klanners and fascists.
Yeah. Well, you said there's a statue at the University of Virginia of Homer. Why don't we put one in the Charlottesville, the Homer Simpson? That would be good. we're talking with David Swanson here from Charlottesville, Virginia. David's been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize numerous times, one of our great peace activists and a real national treasure who lives in Charlottesville and has been viewing this stuff. I did note that, our president, who is, as we know, a really brilliant historical scholar, has suggested that, you know, where will it end next? We take down Robert E. Lee, and the next thing, we'll take down Washington and Jefferson, who were also slave owners. I think eventually we will take down Washington and Jefferson, but it's going to take some time. But it's very important that people understand Robert E. Lee and who he was. Why would they leave? Is it Andrew Jackson or Stonewall Jackson that they have on the other statue there?
Stonewall Jackson. I don't know that we have to take down everyone from some past historical period who did horrible things, right? I mean, do we want people in the future to condemn all of us who destroyed the natural environment in everything we did every day? Do we want them to judge us by mass incarceration? Do we want, you know, there are always going to be improvements, I hope, in society as the decades and centuries go by. But if we had a Robert E. Lee statue in some corner of the town with a historical marker that explained what he was and where the thing came from, you know, that would not be a problem for me. But to have him as our giant, you know, public hero in the central park in the middle of the city and nothing else, you know, other than that statue of Homer over at UVA, nothing other than war statues anywhere, you know, Lewis and Clark statue that you went and scouted for the genocide, you know, that's the problem. And that it was put up by a racist in a segregated park, a whites-only park, for the cause of racism, to glorify someone not only for owning people as slaves, but for fighting a war to defend slavery. You know, that's that's a few steps at least above,
right,
you know, taking down Washington and Jefferson. I mean, this is a town that needs to overcome its myths about Thomas Jefferson, you know, to an incredible extent. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a statue of Jefferson at UVA. He founded UVA. But have some monuments to some other things, some useful things, some actual scholars and educators and, you know, artists and athletes at UVA.
Yeah, well, maybe they could have a statue to Sally Hemings, Thomas's slave mistress, who bore 7 children by him, you know, starting at the age of 19. When he was 49, but that would be of interest. Yeah, this whole thing of monuments, there's one in D.C. that really, really bothers me. They have a monument to George McClellan, who was briefly the leader of the, he was the commander-in-chief of the Union Army. He was a complete idiot. He was really rude to Lincoln. He was a terrible general. And he went on to run against Lincoln in 1864, and you know, why there's a monument to that guy and not to Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Paine, Eleanor Roosevelt, Sojourner Truth? Well, how about a monument to Jeanette Rankin, who voted against both world wars? That would be a wonderful thing. You know, I kind of like monuments. I think you're right. They're very educational. But we need to have monuments to people who were involved with peace as well as with war, for God's sakes.
I couldn't agree more. I don't know that they need to be such giant heroic gods either. They could be human-sized, but Jeanette Rankin would be wonderful. I mean, it would be wonderful to have some peace monuments. There's no law in the state of Virginia against taking down peace monuments, as there is against taking down any war monuments. But we don't have any peace monuments to worry about taking down if we wanted to, and we need them. You know, a guy like Olaudah Equiano, who was a slave in Virginia and went to London and wrote a book and helped lead the movement for abolition of the slave trade and then of slavery, there's not a statue of him anywhere in Virginia. I would like to see him in the U.S. Capitol in place of Robert E. Lee, who, by the way, is in the U.S. Capitol. Every state gets 2 statues, and he's one of Virginia's. But this, you know, I don't think we can go around taking down statues of idiots like McClellan by, on the grounds of being idiots, right? Because, you know, who would back us? You know, we'd be a bunch of elitists, and where would it stop? We'd have to take down all the statues. But war monuments ought to come down, not just the so-called racist ones. I mean, in Charlottesville, there's not really a debate over which are the more racist monuments, the Vietnam monument, the Native American genocide monument, George Rogers Clark, the Confederate monuments. I mean, I think it's open for debate which are the most racist, but I want all the war monuments to come down, even the ones that are imagined as somehow non-racist, or I at least want them, you know, countered by some peace monuments so that, you know, war monuments can have gone up in an era that's passed, and now we're putting up peace monuments. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it would be a great thing. I'd like to see a monument to Gandhi. Of course, the King monument on the Mall is a beautiful piece of work, and it's a great step forward to have a monument to Dr. King. I think it's a terrific thing. So, David, let's segue away from the monuments now. It's a very good discussion, and to the real serious issue now of the rise of the fascists with their ban in the White House. The question is, how do we combat them? How does the liberal left, peace-oriented, social justice-oriented majority of the American people combat this fascist uprising?
Well, you know, there are a lot of creative examples, some stories I can tell from Charlottesville in the past week, but, you know, the people of Durham who go and take down the statue themselves and then turn themselves in by the thousands to overwhelm the so-called justice system, they've got the right idea, right? The people in this town in Germany who, when the Nazis come to march, they sponsor each Nazi, how far they march, and they give dollars to anti-Nazi organizations for how far they march. And so they're out there cheering the Nazis on, you know, and the Nazis are all discouraged and don't want to do it anymore. They've got the right idea. The people in this small town in Texas a couple of months back now, who, you know, the anti-Muslims were coming to rally outside a mosque center, and these, you know, violent black-dressed defenders of the Muslims show up, and the people from the mosque intervene and say, go away, and they go off to a restaurant to talk and discuss things with the anti-Muslims. They've got the right idea. I mean, we need creative, nonviolent activism. We can take down the statues, we can cover up the statues, we can put up our own new statues. You know, I know you want me off the statue topic, but
it's fine. Do it.
It's because this is you know, this is something that's in the corporate media at the moment, and in a couple weeks it might not be. But we got to build on these things. We got to put up monuments to the racial wealth gap in these square, you know, monuments to the federal handouts to only whites in the decades gone by. You know, and we've got to build from, you know, something that's getting some momentum to something further. You know, but the one thing that the fascists and the Nazis want is some violence. I mean, they love that there's violence in Barcelona today, but they would, you know, deeply love violence from the left in the United States. You know, so I mean, there is a grain of truth that Trump is playing off when he tries to equate both sides. But if it became significantly true, they would love that. So we've got to be more active, but disciplined in our nonviolence, and we've got to go after the idea that it's acceptable, that it's somehow a First Amendment right for these people to show up armed to the teeth. It just isn't.
Well, it's not. You're right. And here, the question now is, and of course this is going to be a big discussion, is the Antifa, the people who show up in black, the violence in Berkeley, allegedly on the left, this idea of an alt-left. Give us what you really think now, if you were interested to do it, in this rise of so-called a violent left.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to draw, you know, sharp lines, because you have these situations created that should never have been created, and then you have the strictly nonviolent people testifying that the anti-fascists saved their lives on Saturday in Charlottesville through intervening between them and the raging attacking Nazis, and that their own approach was not strictly nonviolent, that they used pepper spray, you know, against the Nazis. And yet I think that advertising a violent left is incredibly counterproductive, and we would be miles ahead in overall net result without it. I mean, I went to this funeral of this woman who was killed in Charlottesville at a funeral yesterday morning, and the Nazis were threatening to show up, and as far as I know, none did. But you had off to the side these, you know, anti-Nazi people with purple shields and baseball bats and helmets ready just in case to beat somebody with a baseball bat. You know, I think it's, you know, it hurts the cause dramatically. And if we were able to argue against the violent right without having to go up against, you know, everybody, you know, essentially quoting Donald Trump, we would be so much better off, so much farther along. I wrote an article on my website today, davidswanson.org, where I just, you know, came up with dozens of creative, nonviolent approaches we could take to these statues in Charlottesville. There's just no need to resort to violence to come up with ideas, and I think it hurts us. And I think we ought to be going after support for violence as the crime that it is, including from the president. It's a crime and unimpeachable offense. And we now have Steve Cohen from Memphis, Tennessee, introducing articles of impeachment against Trump for inciting racist violence and supporting it. And we have 20,000 people in a day on rootsaction.org saying impeach Trump for this as well as everything else.
Yeah, we had a rally in Santa Monica on August 9th, which we can now call Nagasaki Nixon Day. It's the commemoration of the bombing of Nagasaki and the celebration of Nixon's resigning, and we called for him to resign. So that's going to spread. But this is a difficult one. I had a discussion yesterday with someone who said that we should ignore the alt-right, neo-fascist, you know, pro-Trump rallies and not show up to demonstrate against them. I haven't thought that one through. I mean, because obviously when we demonstrators, anti-fascist, anti-Trump people show up at the pro-Trump, pro-Nazi rallies, you know, violence seems to happen. Even if we go with a nonviolent framework, should we just ignore these rallies or what do you think we should do?
I don't think we should ignore them, and I don't think we should try to ban them. I think we should insist that they be disarmed. If you want to exercise your First Amendment rights to assemble and speak, you don't do it with weapons. You know, I mean, if I can't have a stick with a poster, why should they be able to have automatic weapons and bats and clubs? You know, I think that should be our legal approach. And then when these rallies occur, I think it's useful to have separate rallies in other parts of town for the opposite cause, that is, against racism. I also think it's useful to protest these rallies up close and personal, but to do so in a disciplined, non-violent, non-aggressive, non-hateful, non-screaming and cursing and throwing things approach.
Right.
And, you know, that's not something people in Charlottesville have been capable of yet. But I also think we should reach out and try to invite people. You know, there are groups that, including a group in Chicago that's now lost federal funding, but there are groups that have had success talking Ku Klux Klanners out of being Ku Klux Klanners. And I think we should invite these people to teach-ins, to discussions, off mic, off camera. Let's look at our differences and see what we have in common, rather than just hating them and denouncing them in the same way that they hate and denounce Jews and blacks and so on, you know, because where many of them come from, not the most cynical leaders among them, perhaps, but where many of them come from is perfectly understandable, and they have perfectly legitimate grievances. They just blame the wrong thing for their problems.
Yeah, you know, I actually was stunned to hear what they were chanting. It's such a sad chant from these Klan guys. You will not replace us. I mean, what a sad thing to go through the streets marching and chanting, you will not replace us. I mean, what could that possibly, you know, it speaks to such a sense of defeatism and sadness to me. It's hardly even a chant of hate. It's a chant of desperation, don't you think?
Yeah, they also varied it with Jews will not replace us. But they, you know, they identify with whiteness, right? They identify with the white group, the white race, the white ethnicity, whatever it is. They try to avoid calling it a race, you know. And they see a culture in the United States where it's acceptable and applauded to identify with anything else, right? So to identify as a gay or an African American or a Pacific Islander or a Latino lesbian, you know, any other combination is praiseworthy. And because they don't know anything about history, because they've been through U.S. educational system and don't know anything, they know that if there were a statue of a non-white male being taken down in Charlottesville, there would be an identity group up in arms, right? But they don't stop and consider why there are no statues of non-white males in Charlottesville, you know? And so when they hear about someone having success who's from a minority group, and they resent that person being treated as a hero simply for living their lives, or they hear about somebody getting a scholarship to a college, for, you know, in part for not being white, you know, they resent these things, and they resent them ahistorically and unfairly, and they fail to blame the billionaires and the war profiteers and the corrupt federal government, but they blame the wrong targets. But you go watch a comedy show on Netflix, and you'll hear jokes about white people, right? Jokes about their bad dentistry and their poverty, and you know, in a way that it has become unacceptable, and rightly so, for racist jokes about non-white people and sexist jokes and bigoted jokes of all sorts, and they resent that, and I think, you know, part of what we need is to address their racism directly, but part of what we need is to have a society that supports people universally, that doesn't go to all these efforts to weed out the worthy from the unworthy. I mean, you look at Scandinavia, where everybody gets education, everybody gets health care, everybody gets retirement and vacation and transportation and child care and parks and sustainable energy, and there's not this sort of divisiveness. In this country, you know, we mostly get wars. We get very little else, but the ways in which we get it are divisive, you know, and there's no reason in such a wealthy, wealthy country for most of these, you know, Ku Klux Klanners to, or anybody else, you know, to be so poor off and so insecure and so and struggling to figure out who to blame. Now, they blame the wrong people. And it's toxic and it's deadly, literally deadly, that they blame the wrong people. But you know, I think we have to try to understand them.
Yeah, and it's tell me about this group. You mentioned a group in Chicago that was their purpose was to talk Klan people out of being in the Klan. They had federal funding. I assume Trump took it away. But what was that?
Right. That's right. No, there are a number of groups in Chicago, and one called the Interrupters, I think, that have had a lot of success with getting people away from gang violence and violence of all sorts, including, you know, right wing racist violence. And there have been groups even in the South, even in Durham, North Carolina. There have been African American groups that have talked Ku Klux Klanners out of their Ku Klux Klanism. And there's famously a poor African-American woman and a poor white man who was a, you know, I forget the crazy name, but some big shot in the Ku Klux Klan who became best of friends. And there was a documentary made about them called Unlikely Friends or something of that sort. You know, there are numerous examples. You know, there are people looking for something to identify with, some place to put their blame, some way to think that some other group is below them, and they're all on the edge. And when you have a president openly advocate racism and violence and encourage it, and they've said, many of these people in Charlottesville and elsewhere have openly said they appreciate the president's permission to openly behave the way they do and express these views, you know, it encourages them. But it wouldn't take much. It would not take much if these acts and these views were stigmatized as they should be, and if other approaches were encouraged and they were treated with a little respect and understanding and moved and some moral authority to move them in the other direction, it wouldn't take that much, you know. So to demonize them as subhuman monsters, and this has become all too common in the past 5 days, is to do to them exactly what they do to blacks, right, and Jews and so forth, and exactly what U.S. war propaganda does to people all over the world.
Right, and you know, the Jewish community in particular seems to miss how anti-Semitic these marches are. You know, Trump gets to play it both ways because he's got a Jewish son-in-law, but the anti-Semitism in the pro-Trump movement is devastating. Maybe what we should do, is to start showing up at these Nazi rallies with kegs of beer, and just you know, have a, kind of a beer party and see if we can get everybody drunk together. That might be fun.
I've heard that beer causes more violence, whereas there's a certain weed you can smoke that causes less. But
a lot of these Klan guys smoke pot. I mean, it's not like, a lot of these guys, they look like hippies. You know, they got long hair and,
And
beards.
A lot of the guys in the statues, too, right? I mean, you've written about this.
Exactly. Well, maybe we should offer. I'd like to do that. We could show up with both pot and kegs of beer and, just kind of have a get-together with these Klan guys. You know,
and we'll all go to jail together.
Absolutely. I'm missing a front tooth. I'm sure they can relate to me a lot, so what the heck? Well, so David, now we're talking with David Swanson, davidswanson.org. What's your most recent book, David?
Oh, I think it might have been War Is Never Just, which is, my response to this medieval doctrine that's still hanging around called just war theory.
Yeah, it's insane, isn't it? Or you could say, war is just what? So let's proceed now. What do we do as a nation and as a social justice and peace community? What do we do about this guy in the White House? I mean, it's amazing how consistently insane and awful he's been. And I am not a big fan of the impeachment option. I don't think it's going to work. And it'll take too long. You and I have talked about a possibility of a general strike, a boycott. I mean, how are we actually going to deal with preventing this guy from blowing up the world? Everybody's looking for the magic key here. What do you think?
Well, I am a big fan of impeachment, so we can get into that if you want. I'm also a big fan of the general strike. I think we should all take off work and party in the streets, as you've already recommended, and demand to know why we should work when Robert E. Lee didn't do his own work. I don't think we should throw out any tools just because they haven't worked yet, unless we've got a better one, you know. And if you read John Nichols' book on impeachment, there have been so many successes from impeachment movements that haven't reached impeachment but have accomplished reforms and progress nonetheless, including against presidents that we don't even know about, you know, the impeachment of Harry Truman. People, you know, stare at you. What do you mean the impeachment of Harry Truman? So I don't think the horror of Mike Pence is a legitimate, respectable argument in any way, shape, or form. You know, I mean, fear of the next guy as justification for letting the current guy destroy the world doesn't work for me. And I think that a country that did impeach people for their abuses of power would be a radically different country from the one we're living in, and that would make more difference than who the next man or woman in the office was. Mike Pence would know that he stepped out of line, he would be impeached too. Look at how long taking statues down was understood to take until this week when Baltimore took them down in about 20 minutes. You know, if this movement keeps growing, in which the mainstream of this society denounces Trump as a barbarian, you know, and the articles of impeachment keep piling up. You know, I mean, he should be impeached for his financial corruption, his emoluments, domestic and foreign, his Muslim bans, his sexual assaults, his incitements of violence, his illegal wars, his threats of nuclear war. I mean, it just goes on and on. I don't know that it's impossible, but I think it has to be approached in an informed way that understands that the chief opponents of it are the Democrats. You know, Nancy Pelosi wants Trump in the White House far more than Paul Ryan does. You know, she wants him there in order for the Democrats to, quote unquote, oppose him. You know, just as
right.
when they won the majorities in 06 and Rahm Emanuel came in 07 and said, yeah, but we're going to keep the war going in order to run against it again in 2 years. You know, this is we have to recognize where they're coming from and move them to where we're coming from.
The Democrats are truly awful. I mean, and they get worse and worse. And Trump is a godsend for the Democrats. They don't have to do anything. All they have to do is say, "Well, I'm not Donald Trump. Send me money," and that's what they do.
That's their plan. Yeah, that's their plan, and we have to make that not work. We have to say to them, "You're with the white supremacists. You're a Trump supremacist. If you're not on the side of the rule of law, and you're not removing
right.
him from office, we'll remove the whole lot of you."
I'm not against impeachment. I mean, I'm in favor of proceeding with impeachment, but I would love to see us get to the point, our movement get to the point where we could boycott companies like Trump, like Trump's businesses, and bring them to their knees, and B, do a general strike where we could really take control of the country and away from the corporation, and make it clear that the people run the country and not the corporation. That would be truly amazing. So I'm not against impeachment at all, but I am against putting all of our eggs in that basket.
Well, I don't want all the eggs in any one basket, and I'm all in favor, but it has to be built larger and larger. It's going to get harder and harder to keep it nonviolent, and the response from Trump is not going to be immediate resignation, much less becoming someone he's incapable of becoming. It's going to be violence from the federal government, and then do we grow more disciplined and more determined, or do we back off and cower? That, you know, that it remains to be seen. But I would love to compel him to resign, you know, without having to go through the Congress, which is you know just an inch away from being as bad as he is. But there's a way to build up to it, I'm for it.
Yes, and, you know, we also are looking at this prospect of nuclear war, although I have to say it's so amazing the short half-life of news stories. I mean, last week, sometime, as I recall, we were all on edge and desperately concerned about the possibility of the idiot leader of North Korea getting into a nuclear war with the idiot leader of the United States. And suddenly, it's gone. I mean, have we heard anything lately about this confrontation with the North Koreans? It's like the news cycle is about 15 seconds, like or 15 minutes, like Andy Warhol said. You have to wonder what the next crisis is going to be.
Well, it's going to be next week when they start more war games over there. The U.S. does, you know. But the South Korean president has now, you know, collapsed and allowed more weaponry in and allowed the war games to continue. But he has sworn that South Korea will not permit any U.S.-North Korean war. And, you know, we have to support him in that statement. But we have to get him back to, you know, where what he was elected to do, which was to keep the weapons out. You know, if there was something we should ignore, I think maybe it should have been that crazy statement from Trump about fire and fury. I think he would have forgotten it in 5 minutes if everybody hadn't reminded him. But it's too late now, you know.
Yeah, we have to remember also that while all this Sturm und Drang goes on, all these statues and nuclear war and all this other stuff, that they are completely destroying the Environmental Protection Agency the regulation of the market, the stock market, and all the other corporate regulations that have been in place. He announced his infrastructure lunacy yesterday. And, you know, having a Donald Trump administer a multi-trillion dollar infrastructure program is like handing the keys to the bank to the Corleone family. One thing I will say about Trump, which I am grateful for, he is not a Cold War president. And, you know, you and I are old enough to remember the Cold War and all this nonsense about capitalism versus communism and freedom and blah, 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 the free world. This guy, at least we know that all he is a mafia guy, that he's in there for the money. And, you know, his relationship with Putin is that basically Donald Trump is Putin's money launderer. And there's no ideological nonsense here. It's all about theft, and it's all about how much can these guys grab and when and before they get out of there. And Trump is such a robber baron president. It's almost refreshing. It's just there's none of this nonsense of communism and capitalism. No ideology. It's just everything I can grab, I'm going to grab. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I couldn't agree more that, you know, while these other catastrophes are playing out and the news corporations are, you know, switching back and forth between which one they care about this week, the natural environment of the planet is being destroyed. I wanted to mention that we're planning a big conference like the one that you were good enough to speak at last year, this September, in D.C., with the theme of war and the environment and bringing environmental groups and anti-war groups together. And if people are interested in that, they can go to worldbeyondwar.org and reserve a place to attend September 22nd to 24th in D.C.
You had it at the university last time. Where was it?
Yes, this was at American University, and again, it'll be in a different building, but again, it'll be at American University, which is good enough to let us organize these conferences.
Well, there was a wonderful conference last year. I was honored to be invited. David Swanson, davidswanson.org. World Beyond War is also one of your books, isn't it?
Not a book, but it's an organization that I'm the director of, and one of the things it does is put on these conferences.
Okay, so I would be remiss, and thank you, David, for being with us today. I know you had to take time off from your kids. We got just a few minutes left, and I got to say, I've been driving up the 101 here. My daughter Julie has been driving. My daughter Shoshi has been patiently sitting in the back, and we only lost coverage once, so I suppose I should thank Verizon, even though their bills are outrageous. I'd be remiss in not mentioning two things. First of all, my primary terror with Donald Trump is the collapse of our operating nuclear power plants. There are 99 of them still operating. We just did a show last week on the collapse, we hope permanent collapse, of the construction project in South Carolina of two reactors at the VC Summer site. We are hoping that the two reactors at Vogtle in Georgia will also be soon canceled. You and Virginia have North Anna to worry about, and I am still in terror of the nuclear reactors in this country just flat out collapsing with this idiot in the White House who doesn't believe in regulation. That's one concern. The other the collapse of the stock market and the housing market. You know, if anything's going to bring Chuck down, he's down to 33% ratings, but the stock market and the housing market have been booming. Strikes me as a major bubble that I think people have got to be really concerned about. I can't imagine with a moron in the White House like him that the stock market and the housing markets are going to continue to boom. What do you think, David?
I have very little expertise on the stock market and very little faith in those who claim they do have that expertise. But I haven't really known it to be opposed to idiocy so much as to equity and fairness and generosity. So, you know, it remains to be seen. But I think the open courting of incredible risks, not only to this economy, but to the natural environment of the planet and the risk of nuclear apocalypse are absolutely intolerable and have been made routine and normalized. And this frightens me, the nuclear weapons and the nuclear power plants and the ongoing devastation of the climate and the water and the earth. I mean, these scare me more than the militarized police we had in Charlottesville, which in turn scare me more than the racist Ku Klux Klanners. So there's plenty to worry about.
Well, has there in Charlottesville been any tangible outreach, any tangible detente between the KKK, the neo-Nazis, and the peace movement? Do you have any instances of, you know, kumbaya here?
Oh, well, there's a story on the USA Today of a woman I've been in touch with who was on the anti-racist side, who aided and comforted and gave medical assistance to an injured, Nazi, and you know, other stories like that. There were a number of people on the anti-racist side who helped some of the racists escape a bad situation and get to their vehicles and leave, which I think was very appropriate and commendable, given that back in July the anti-racist crowd tried to keep the Ku Klux Klanners from leaving, which seemed crazy to me. There have been these interactions where people have at least shown some humanity to each other, but then there have been many where violence has been threatened, rape has been threatened, people have been beaten with sticks and run over with cars. And there are a great many people, even those committed to nonviolence on the good side here, who really say hateful things about the Nazis and the Ku Klux Klanners and would not be open to trying to meet with them or understand them or persuade them of better ways. I don't think that's an easy task, but I think it's something we have to try to work at.
Well, I think I like this idea. I think that you and I and a bunch of other folks, the next time there's a Klan rally, we should show up with pot and beer. And see if that works.
Boston in a couple weeks. I think maybe Southern California. They may be coming out your way.
I don't drink beer, but I do occasionally take a whiff of it. Thank you,
was
David Swanson. You are great.
Was
we'll see you at the next rally. Take care.
Thanks, Harvey.
We can see okay. Either way. We got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.